time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
Yes, it does, and great to have you with us on this Thursday edition of the show. Week 16 in the NFL about to kick off. We'll have contender pretender. Dennis Bernstein will drop by from thefourthperiod.com, get some thoughts around the NHL with him. Alabama's begging for your money. And Doug Gottlieb is learning that coaching college basketball is a lot harder than talking about college basketball. All right, Sam Yarnell, I'm not going to waste any time. Let's jump in. I had planned to spend this segment talking mostly about the Aaron Rodgers documentary that came out on Netflix this week. I want to spend a few minutes on it, but then I want to get into the entire dumpster fire that is the Jets, as we learned more today in a piece from The Athletic and our friend Diana Rossini, along with a couple of other fine writers at The Athletic who put this piece together. Zach Rosenblatt and Michael Silver also contributing on this lengthy article, which if you have a chance to read it, go and check it out, because it really encapsulates everything that is this Jets disaster. But I want to say this about the Aaron Rodgers documentary to start. I watched all 3 hours on Tuesday night in preparation for a column I had to write for MSNBC that's dropping today. I learned a lot, I have to say, about the backstory of Aaron Rodgers and how we got to where we are. This is called Enigma, Aaron Rodgers Enigma. It could just as easily be called Aaron Rodgers Contradiction. It could be called Aaron Rodgers Perfectionist, because the way it comes together, a lot of the conversation is about his being a perfectionist and how that so in so many ways sort of writes the story of who he is and the way he behaves. You could call it contradiction as well, because to me, he wants it both ways about everything. He wants to tell you he doesn't care what you think, but then he has a TV documentary company follow him around for a year and chronicle his every move. That's not the thoughts and the mindset of somebody who doesn't care about what you think. He wants to tell you he hasn't, you know, he has nothing left to prove, but then he's out there clearly showing that he still has something he has left to prove. So in so many ways, this documentary to me shows the contradiction that is Aaron Rodgers. But there were a lot of things that I took away from it that made me look at him in a slightly different light. But ultimately, it still all comes back to the fact that I think a lot of what has come down on him is from a lot of the decisions he has made in his life. And there's countless examples as you go through the documentary and watch it. I would encourage people, if you have an interest in this sort of thing, to go and check it out. It is interesting. Sam, I suspect you have not watched it yet, right?
The Frisco Bowl was very good. The Boca Raton Bowl, how about that? James Madison on, shout out to the Dukes. We talked about him on the program all year, on QBs 3 and 4 running all over Western Kentucky.
Yep.
Then the LA Bowl was awesome as well. I told you, Jason Page, there are going to be better things on my TV than wasting 3 hours of my life learning about Aaron Rodgers, who I've heard nothing but bad things about since 2010. I think that my main takeaway from all this is it's very interesting with the Aaron Rodgers thing, that once he became smart enough to, and you'd think that a Cal-educated man would come out of his junior year of college smart enough to, but I guess not. Once he became smart enough to learn that if he controlled the narrative, all of the bad press around him might subside, the damage had been done. Let's not forget, this is a guy who nixed his family during the Super Bowl years when he was actually a really good quarterback. There are countless stories about this guy. I'm not giving him the benefit of the doubt because some production company sold Netflix a 3 hour long puff piece on him.
I will say the family stuff, I think, is a little more complicated than you make it out to be. When his brother went on The Bachelorette and they spilled family secrets sort of on that show, I can understand.
I think it's more an anecdote, though, right? Because think about that with the thing with his ex-girlfriend that's now coming out, Woodley or whatever, Shania Woodley or whatever her name is. You put all the things together and you realize that the guy as a human being does not have good intentions. So I'm not going to give him the benefit of the doubt, like I said, because of a puff piece.
Yeah, I don't think it was a puff piece, though. The one thing I will say, I didn't think it was a puff piece. I thought it was pretty even-handed. The only thing I had an issue with is they ignored and completely omitted the Jimmy Kimmel stuff that he said in the Epstein doc. They went into some of the things that he said that were controversial, and he got to explain his side of it, and you can take from that what you want. But the Jimmy Kimmel stuff was completely omitted from the documentary. And I thought that kind of raised an eyebrow with me that they just completely stayed away from that. Anyway, it's on Netflix. People could check it out and decide for themselves what they think. This piece that came out today in The Athletic from Diana Russini, Zach Rosenblatt, and Michael Silver paints a disturbing picture of what's going on inside that Jets organization right now with Woody Johnson at the helm, who's basically become Jerry Jones without the championship rings. I mean, that's essentially what you've gotten now. You know, you've got Woody Johnson, who has really put his hands all over every facet of this franchise that he can. And you see what the end result is, taking a guy that's the heir to the Johnson & Johnson fortune and just saying, okay, you have a football team, do what you want with it. It is an utter disaster. There are countless anecdotes in this piece. There are countless different anonymous but well-attributed sources in this. And you can tell a lot of this clearly came from Joe Douglas. Like, if you read this, you can tell Joe Douglas got let go, and the first thing he did was run to the media and say, boy, do I got some stories for you. Because if you read between the lines of some of these things, they had to have come from the former GM.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how the narrative has kind of shifted around the Jets over the course of this season. Meanwhile, they're like the same Jets that they've been. I said this on the program on Tuesday. It's the same Jets they've been for 5 years, just in 14. Maybe different jerseys 14. And different helmets.
Yeah, I mean, it's 14. I mean, they've been a disaster for the last 14 years. And this piece of The Athletic goes through all of it. Go and check it out today. It is worth the read. It is a lengthy read, but it is worth the read. We've got more to get to coming up in a couple of minutes. Contender Pretender, week 16 in the NFL is here. Welcome back to this Thursday edition of the show. Dennis Bernstein in 10 minutes to talk some pucks. Get his thoughts on what's going on around the league. Had a chance to hang out with him this weekend here in Vegas. Dude went to 2 concerts, Sam. He went and saw the Eagles at the Sphere and Garth Brooks at Caesars. It's a man about the town. Dennis Bernstein will hang out with us. I'll probably ask him a question about those 2 shows as well. All right, Sam. It is week 16 in the NFL. It gets started with the Broncos and Chargers, which we will give you a little insight on in odds and ends a little later on in the show. But as it is Thursday and week 16 in the NFL, it's time for a little something we call Contender Pretender, Sam Yarnell. 3 contenders, 3 pretenders. Last week, I chewed up all the time with my terrible clock management, so you get to lead things off today. Have at it, sir.
All right, Jason Page, my first contender. Call me a homer all you want. It's the Buffalo Bills. The Buffalo Bills are a contender to be the number one seed in the AFC. Yeah, ooh. I said it. 3 games in 11 days for this Mahomes ankle injury riddled Chiefs. I don't know. You give me my money, I'm going to bet against them. I'm going to take the Buffalo Bills to be the number one seed and handle business against the Patriots twice and the Jets once. More on the Jets later. So the Buffalo Bills, for me, contender to be the number one seed in the AFC East. On the other side, whoa, buckle your seatbelts. The Minnesota Vikings are a contender to be the number one seed in the NFC. That's right. You heard me right. The Minnesota Vikings. Listen, the Detroit Lions are an injured football team. We know that. They're obviously going to make the playoffs. They're obviously still going to be in Super Bowl contention. They're still very, very talented and maybe the grittiest team in the NFL. All of that said, the dice have rolled the way of the Minnesota Vikings late in this regular season, and I really think that they've got a solid chance if they can finish off this regular season strong, including a matchup with the Detroit Lions late in this season, I believe week 18, the Minnesota Vikings are going to have a shot at that number one overall seed in the NFC. The Minnesota Vikings are number one seed NFC contenders. My third contender, this is a little bit of an unorthodox one. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, settle down. They're not a contender for the Super Bowl. Don't get me wrong. But they're a contender to make a run at the NFC Championship. This is a team that has shown their friskiness all season. And right when you think they're not going to win a game, they blow a team out by 30. I'm looking at you, Los Angeles Chargers. So the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who beat the Eagles earlier this season, are a frisky team to me that are contenders to make a run at the NFC Championship. All right, to my pretenders, well, this week, it's just one pretender, the New York Jets. Anything you thought the Jets were, anything you thought they were above a 500 team, they weren't. Anything you thought they were with regard to contending for the division, well, that was gone week 10. You didn't even have Thanksgiving in contention for the division. My gosh, it was maybe the worst season the Jets can have had in my memory. When you combine everything this team was built up to be, all the Aaron Rodgers talk, oh, they went out and got Devontae Adams as a team meddling around 500. Maybe they'll do something. Poke the bear. See if it's still alive. It turns out it wasn't. This season was over before it even started for the Jets, and you're seeing exactly why right now. They've got an owner that just does not care about the right things with regard to winning football games. And when you have that, as we've seen in the league countless other times, you're just gonna not ever be anything in this league. So that's what the Jets are. They're the only pretender this week, because at the end of the day, we could laugh at the Raiders, we can laugh at the Giants, but they'll have good draft picks this year. The Jets can't even lose a game when they need to. They're the biggest pretender in the NFL.
I'll tell you another thing while you were talking about that. You mentioned the Jets. Another thing I took away from that documentary that you're never going to watch. Aaron Rodgers was going to play last season if they were in contention on that Christmas Eve game. He was going to play, which would have been wild to see. Might have been the end of his career.
Talk about his trainer in the documentary, the one that said that he would quit on Aaron Rodgers if he tried to play again that season?
No, they had a
Do
lot.
Do you remember with, that yeah, falling yeah, yeah, out yeah, when yeah, that yeah. whole thing happened?
Mm-hmm. Neil Ellitrosh was featured a lot on it. They didn't talk that much about that.
Interesting.
About that trainer. That was not a feature. They did not, the trainers and everybody were making it clear they really didn't want him to play, though. And he put his foot down and was like, I'm playing. If this comes down to us being in contention, I'm going to play. Take from that what it may, what you may. All right. Contender, pretender. I am struggling today with my voice, but I'm going to get through it. Contender, pretender. Eagles to win it all. And this is why I was making a face when you mentioned the Vikings. I mean, the reality is the Eagles are, if they beat the Commanders this week, they're going to wind up being in a really good position because they finish out against the Cowboys and Giants. So the Eagles, to me, still have a great path and an opportunity to go to the Super Bowl. And look, you know what? For all the, Michigas sort of surrounding this team right now, Sam, the fact of the matter is they're still figuring out ways to win games. And sometimes there are teams and groups that win championships despite strife and turmoil. I can go through the history of sports and bring you tons of them. Just go watch the Michael Jordan Bulls documentary, The Last Dance, and you'll see plenty of that as well. So I will put the Eagles up there as a contender to win it all. The Los Angeles Rams. I am high on the Rams. Anybody who's watched this show knows it. I think they are the most dangerous potential team that's sort of playing their best football at the right time. I know they didn't play great last week, but they found a way to win. We just watched them beat a Buffalo Bills team that I think all of us would agree is a Super Bowl contender. High on the list as a Super Bowl contender. Give me the Rams as a contender. Tampa Bay, a contender to win a playoff game, at least. They are another dangerous team headed into this postseason. Love where Tampa Bay is right now. Real quick on my pretenders. Dan Campbell to be a Super Bowl winning head coach. You cannot make decisions the way he makes decisions and have me think you're going to be a Super Bowl winning head coach. Maybe he'll prove me wrong. I hope for the sake of our Lions fans watching in Detroit, we love you guys over there, that I am wrong. The Washington Commanders to win a playoff game. Pretender! Even if they get in, I don't think they're winning one. They have not played good football since the Hail Mary. Just go and look at it. I'll take the Commanders as a pretender to win a playoff game. And the Jets, also on my pretender list, Sam Yarnell, to win a Super Bowl in my lifetime. Pretenders. Dennis Bernstein, he's a New Yorker. He'll join us coming up in a couple of minutes. Welcome back to this Thursday edition of Sports Wrap. I was lucky this weekend. Two of my very favorite contributors on this show and every show I've been on both happened to be in Las Vegas at the same time. We talked yesterday on the show with Kurt Heelan of Pro Basketball Talk at NBCSports.com. Got to take him out to dinner on Sunday night. On Saturday, I got to go out to lunch with this guy, the great Dennis Bernstein of the fourthperiod.com and SiriusXM NHL Radio, who I got to have lunch with. The plan was to take him out to lunch. He wouldn't allow for that.
I'm sneaky like that.
We had lunch over at Caesars. It was delicious at the time. We'll just leave it at that.
Yes.
But it was great to meet you after all these years.
Absolutely, Jay.
It was a blast. So thank you for coming out. And you got to go see a couple of great concerts over the weekend because you're just, man, you're just a jet setter. You're just out there doing some fun stuff. You saw the Eagles.
So Eagles at Sphere Friday night, and then Saturday night, just an amazing performer, Garth Brooks. It's the second or third time we've seen him. He was just incredible. And we had great seats. We were in the second or third row, and he just
Did he have any special guests?
Trisha Yearwood came out.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then these guys that you or me wouldn't know, but they're all Hall of Famers. One guy's a Hall of Fame for being a fiddler, another guy for a guitarist. So it's a huge band. It was great. He's such a great performer. I tell people, look, the tickets are expensive, but go see Garth at the Coliseum if you're in Vegas. He's just, it's worth every penny without question.
Let me start in the West, and I promise not to spend the entire segment on the West like I did the last time I had you on, because I felt like we barely even scratched the surface on the East. Winnipeg has bounced back a little bit here after going through a little bit of a rut. Still on top in the Central, out there in the Western Conference. Give me some thoughts right now on the Jets.
Well, they coughed up the lead last night late in Anaheim, wound up losing 3-2.
Saw that.
One of the reasons that they regressed a little bit is that you can't play 800% hockey in this league. Just can't do it. And then Nikolaj Ehlers was hurt for a stretch. And they came back down to earth. They're a really good team. They could win the division. They could emerge from the West. But you're going to go through these fits and starts of not playing well and not making mistakes. And it's not the most gifted team in the world. Everybody has to be on the same page. And they went through a little bit of a dip. But I think at the end, it wouldn't shock me at game 82 if they're playing for a division title in the Central.
Dennis, we talked about the disappointment the Rangers have been. You loved them before the season started. They go out and make a deal with the Seattle Kraken on Wednesday. What does this bring to the Blue Shirts?
I don't know. It changes the deck chairs on the Titanic, maybe. That's about it. Now, Will Borgen's, I think he was a third-round pick back in the day. He's a physical third-pair defenseman. And Kaapo Kakko was the second overall pick. So I always say prospects are cool, but rings are cooler. So you can have all the prospects in the world. A lot of them in this league don't work out. And one of them was Kaapo Kakko. Now maybe he goes to Seattle, plays with a young center like Matty Beniers and finds his career. Sometimes it just doesn't happen for the Rangers.
Change of scenery? Is it a change of scenery? It's a guy who's a free agent coming up in the summer. You don't really lose a lot if you consider that Kakko really wasn't giving him much.
He scored 4 goals, so he wasn't giving them money, but he's a better offensive player. I don't think that a better defensive player. I don't think the Rangers are any better. They're trying to change the paradigm because when you watch this team play and they play St. Louis and they play Nashville, teams they should beat, and they look like they're going through the motions at game 30, it's troubling. So what are they trying to do? They're trying to, you know, change, not that Trouba was a fringe player, Jason, but he's not a core player. So they're trying to change the look a little bit in the locker room, and maybe this works and maybe it doesn't. But it's weird because Borgen's a physical defenseman. You had a physical defenseman in Trouba. You traded him away, and now you need more physicality. So it's the people still scratching their heads in New York. We're going to see if this changes the paradigm at all. I'm not sure it does because, again, the players – they brought in on-point players for guys that they traded away.
Is the next change going to be on the bench with Peter Laviolette being at risk here? How much longer do you think he has?
Not much. I think he'll probably make the holiday break. Everybody plays until the 23rd, unless the bottom falls out in these other games. It's just, I don't like body. Look, you can lose games. I get it. The expectations are very high. If they wanted to turf Laviolette right now based on the record alone, they could do it because the expectations aren't there. I don't think they're even in a playoff spot, right? I don't like the way they play. I don't like the body language. Like, yes, in other seasons, Jason, they get out chance. They get out shot, and you had Shesterkin back there saving the day. It's just when you watch the Zibanejad, he looks defeated. And look at Chris Kreider. Looks like he doesn't have a lot of hope. The other night, they were down 3-0 in St. Louis, and they had Will Cooley and Connor McKay score goals. Like, those are the guys that want to lead you back when you desperately need a win. Now, granted, Panarin's a hurt, which helps, which doesn't help at all. But I think, the next move if this team doesn't respond would be to turf the coach and look for another option.
The Devils have been better on the power play as of late. Get a win. Have won three straight here. Give me some thoughts on the Devils.
As long as they're healthy, they're going to be there. And wow. Then I have a goaltender in Markstrom. This is a really talented team. Right now, Washington's doing amazing things. Right? They've had a great start. Nobody saw them playing this great hockey, but I think at the end of the day, pound for pound, when you look at the Devils, I think at this point you got to pick them to win the division. Right? I love the Rangers, as you mentioned. I picked them to win the Cup, but right now I think the best balanced team and the deepest team and probably a little bit more edge and talent would be the New Jersey Devils. So, and that's all they needed. They needed goaltending, which, you know, Tom Fitzgerald waited and waited and waited last season to make the trade. By the time he made a trade for Jake Allen, it was too late. Now he's got Jake Allen. Now he's got Markstrom. Everybody's healthy. This can be a very dangerous team. This is another team, Jason, because there's a lot of parity in this league that could emerge from the East and be the Cup finalist when we get to June.
You mentioned the Capitals. Any idea when Alex Ovechkin's going to be back? I know he's in the non-contact jersey right now.
Yeah, I would think it would be early January, right? So he's on a non-contact. There's a holiday break from the 24th to the 27th. So I think what usually happens is they'll monitor it. They're playing great. They don't need him, which sounds crazy. And they score a lot of goals, which sounds even crazy. So I think middle of January, usually what happens is, like with Drew Doughty here in Los Angeles, the team will want to go out on the road. So it can get a little less of a distraction, go out. So I think the first road trip after the holiday break, you might see Ovechkin to assimilate back into the team and practices and stuff like that. And so I think you're probably looking at within the month that you see Alex Ovechkin back, that would be great.
I am based here in Vegas in the final 20 seconds. Besides the fact that they're in first place, give me a reason to go see the Las Vegas Golden Knights here in the new year.
The pregame. It's done like nobody else. Everything else. It's all about entertainment in Vegas, and they get it, and the organization gets it, and Bill Foley gets it. It's just the entire experience of going to a game, the pregame stuff with the night fighting and stuff like that, and the girls and the siren. It's just a lot of fun. You'll have a lot of fun.
All right.
And it's a pretty darn good hockey team.
Yeah, it really is. I'm going to go see him. Dennis Bernstein, TheFourthPeriod.com, SiriusXM, NHL Radio. Good to see you over the weekend. We'll talk again soon.
It was a pleasure, Jay. Thanks for the time.
Something to consider coming up in 10 minutes, and Doug Gottlieb might want to consider some things in his life right now. I used to have a lot of respect for Doug Gottlieb, really. I did. Knew him a little bit during his time with ESPN when I was in Hartford and then when I was in New York. But boy, has he gone off the rails. We'll get to that coming up in a few minutes. Probably some buyer's remorse right now at UWGB. So, Sam Yarnell, Alabama needs your money. Greg Byrne, the athletic director at the University of Alabama, after missing the college playoff, college football playoff, which gets going on Friday, in Kalen DeBoer's first season, says now in a letter posted on X, because, hey, where else are we going to put it? That now is a time for action and time for the Bama Nation to fight back. Quote, although we have been competitive from an NIL standpoint, our competition has us in their sights and are actively trying to surge ahead with NIL, he says. You have heard examples of other teams using promises of million-dollar paydays to lure away our players or convince them not to come to Alabama. It is time for the Bama Nation to fight back, Sam Yarnell. Sam Yarnell, Alabama as the underdog story when it comes to recruiting because they don't have enough money. Wow.
So if you had any question about how the Alabama fan base and how the Alabama fans that actually matter to the university and the athletic department feel about Kalen DeBoer, this is your answer. Because this was never a problem when Nick Saban was coach. This wasn't a problem when they missed the playoff in 18. I forget what year.
But let me ask you something. But let me ask you something. But not to cut you off, but I have to ask you this.
Yeah.
Don't you think that Nick Saban left because maybe he saw this handwriting on the wall? That it was going to become more difficult. And that's what, because look, he did point to NIL and all of that is, you know, and having to go into kids' living rooms and sort of
but
sell them on
coming.
But I think
it's that. I think Nick Saban was more scared of doing exactly what happened with him and the Dolphins, right? Which is having to negotiate with the players that you're coaching and putting dollar figures around them. Money coming into the University of Alabama's football program, I can confidently say between their alumni group and the status of their football program year in and year out, I do not think has ever been an issue.
Mark Ingram, we need your checks.
Right. Well, I think that now when you have a coach who replaces the all-time greatest coach in college football history, I think it's safe to say, I don't know, Bear Bryant, but whatever, like still another Alabama legend.
Yes. Yeah.
And replace them with Kalen DeBoer, who comes out and has the type of season where he does, where it's still a Saban-built team. These are all largely players that Nick Saban recruited along with some of the top guys that Kalen DeBoer brought over from Washington, right? In the SEC, where they were competitive, but ultimately did not bring home an SEC championship or a college football playoff berth, when I say the fans that really matter, the donors to that program, they're the ones who start to not see the light at the end of the tunnel or not agree with the long-term outlook of a guy like Kalen DeBoer. And frankly, it's understandable when you just came off of 20 plus years of Nick Saban dominance in college football. But Jason, at the end of the day, it just to me spells that Kalen DeBoer is not going to last very long at the University of Alabama.
Burn continues. We have been careful during this transitional period to protect our position at the top of college athletics while being mindful to listen, engage, and learn from our generous supporters, proud alumni, and unrivaled fans to make sure that we protect our great traditions here at Alabama. But there's a time for talk and a time for action. Now is a time for action. Alabama, by the way, has lost 14 players already to the transfer portal.
Listen, this is college football today. You know what I mean? Like, this is the direction in which the sport continues to head. And at the end of the day, it's really starting to feel between Bill Belichick at UNC, Andrew Luck at Stanford, Michael Vick at Norfolk State. I said this on the show on Tuesday, and again, this is just pointing more and more towards it.
I said
college football is becoming the NFL junior. It's becoming where old NFL legends go to finish their careers.
This is what prompted me to text our friend Bill Bender at the Sporting News last night. Because when I saw this, I said, am I reading this right? Is he basically begging people for money? And this is the part that kind of spells it out. Byrne encouraged Alabama fans to give to Yeah Alabama, the athletic department's NIL entity, and noted the school was focused on providing our fans with a legitimate product rather than booster inducements. Like that to me, like who okayed that? Who said, yeah, this is a good idea to have our AD go out there and beg our fans for money? Like it's a telethon, like it's St. Jude. Like, good Lord, what are we doing? Well, we'll see what the offseason looks like over at Alabama. They lost some players. I'm sure they'll gain some as well. Lots more to do. Something to consider with Doug Gottlieb next. Let's take it to segment 5 on this Thursday edition of Sports Wrap. Programming note, by the way, next week we will be off on Christmas Day and the day after Christmas, but we'll be back on Friday to get you ready for week 17 in the NFL. Getting into the holiday schedule. Special editions of Sports Wrap as we get through the and get around the end of the year. Sam Yarnell, something to consider on this Thursday, that coaching is a lot harder than talking about coaching. And Doug Gottlieb chooses to do both. He chooses to talk about coaching and coach, which might be part of the reason why, he has a 2-win University of Wisconsin Green Bay team that lost to the Division II Michigan Tech on Wednesday night after Gottlieb had previously said he didn't want to play nobody U. He didn't want to schedule these games against teams like Michigan Tech because he didn't think his team was getting anything out of beating a Michigan Tech by 20. The problem is they were up double digits in the second half and then lost to nobody U, Michigan Tech. And then you had Gottlieb after the game sitting up there on the podium trying to answer questions. Then he goes on X later on and says, I'm tired of this. Because people brought up the nobody you comments and suggested that it obviously wasn't a good look for him. This is the same Doug Gottlieb that was getting into it with Adam Schefter on social media. This is the same Doug Gottlieb who has been incredibly outspoken on a number of topics on social media, which, by the way, is not a crime. But it felt like this thing was doomed to fail. And I said it back when they hired him that this thing was doomed to fail because he didn't even want to give up his radio job. And then he's out there talking about the fact that he's approaching this with 100% enthusiasm and 100% of himself and giving all of himself to it. No, you're not. I know what it takes to put together a radio show every day, even with good producers behind you. I know the work it takes to put it in. You cannot take from your work as a Division I college basketball coach and then say, well, I'm going to take some of that time and put it towards my radio show or if he's on TV anywhere. You just can't do it, Sam.
They're 2-11. They've lost 8 straight games.
Yep. It's about to get worse, too. They're about to play Drake, who's one of the few undefeated teams left in college basketball.
Doug Gottlieb took this job and knew that it was controversial. Mm-hmm. It was Wisconsin Green Bay in the Horizon League. Yeah, he should have been able to go in and win at least half of his games. He should have at least won a conference game before his fourth.
Yes.
None of that is true. By the way, you say should have because these other coaches in this league don't know what he's bringing to the table. Like, they're going out against something they've never seen before and beating it. Do you know how bad you have to be to do that? Like, think about how frequently we see a any team, but specifically in basketball, like when the Bucks fired Adrian Hill and hired Doc Rivers, you saw the Bucks win two games because they were playing a completely different system. And his system is just that bad. So this is very interesting to me because I think this is almost, and this is a very deep wormhole to go down, but it's almost Aaron Rodgers-esque, right? Like he took the job just because he wanted to boost numbers on the Doug Gottlieb show.
Yeah.
Right? It just feels more and more like that. It feels more and more like it's getting closer to, well, I really tricked you all into thinking that I was taking this seriously, and now you're going to listen to my radio show a lot more. That's where I'm at with it. It feels to me like they're so bad at this point. It's like it was a joke.
Here's the thing. Two things can happen when you have a situation like what transpired last night with Michigan Tech. If you're Doug Gottlieb, you can kind of throw yourself at the mercy of the court. You can be humbled. You can talk about, you know what? It's a lot more difficult coaching than it is talking about it. You could go that route. It's there. It's an avenue you can take. Or you can decide to drive off-road, in your Mercedes and crash into a tree, which is basically what he did last night, metaphorically speaking. I mean, he had those options to him. You can be humbled, and people will take pity. Some will be sympathetic. Some will be more understanding. You will grab some of the media and have them as allies. Now you've essentially alienated everybody. Your program's a joke. The idea of you being a head coach and being a talk show host at the same time has been found to be pure folly. And there's no way this story ends well. And he says he's sticking this out. He's going to see it through to a Horizon League championship. Let me tell you something. There is no way this thing ends with him being a champion in the Horizon League. I mean, it just doesn't. You cannot get off to this kind of start, regardless of, you know, what kind of name power you have, all of that. Who's going to want to come and play at this program when you don't even have a coach that's dedicated to being a full-time head coach? And I say this again as somebody that respected Doug Gottlieb as a talk show host. But what he's doing right now is just flat out wrong.
You're right. Hey, in other news, the Horizon League is actually like wide open. Like Milwaukee, Youngstown State, Northern Kentucky's got a chance.
Sure.
Anyone but Green Bay.
We're coming back. Odds and ends. The Warriors are first place in something. I'll tell you what it is next. All right. Just about time to put the wraps on this baby for a Thursday. Reminder, Friday show. Paige versus the Prince, our NFL weekly picks. Robert Littal drops by from Black Sports Online to talk about the top stories of the week. Always love hanging out with him. If you have not done so yet, Sports Wrap with Jason Page podcast available on all your favorite podcasting platforms. Go and check it out today. Subscribe. It's free. You can watch it on Spotify. You can listen to it on YouTube podcasts. Mm-hmm. You can also check it out on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Odyssey, you name it. We are on all of them. Sports Wrap with Jason Page, Substack also available. Go and subscribe today. Without any further delay, Sam Yarnell, time for some odds and ends. Odds and ends, Sam Yarnell. The Golden State Warriors are the most valuable NBA franchise. Somewhere James Dolan is like pulling his hair out right now. He can't believe he's not number one when it comes to franchise valuations. The Warriors are first at $9.14 billion. Joe Lacob is swimming in it. The Knicks are second at $8.3 billion. The Lakers third at $8.07 billion, according to Sportico, which announced its annual assessment on Wednesday. Not bad. Not bad if you're the Warriors.
And it's all because of one kid out of a small school in North Carolina. Think about it, man. There's a parallel universe where they don't make that one draft pick, and the franchise may have moved already. It's crazy how much one player changed the trajectory of that franchise and made them the most valuable in the NBA.
Sam, he would have been on the Knicks. He would have been on the Knicks if the Warriors don't steal him then. He would have been on the Knicks. And you think about, I mean, the way the history of those franchises potentially change if Stephen Curry's on the Knicks instead of the Warriors. Then again, the Knicks were pretty bad at that time, and they would have probably figured out a way to screw it up.
So were the Warriors!
I agree. There's something to be said for that. But James Dolan was so dysfunctional under James Dolan for so long. And now it really isn't, because he has
This is the culmination of that.
Well, it's true. And he's taking a hands-off sort of approach. The average NBA team, by the way, worth $4.6 billion. 15% over last year. They're fifth. They went up fifth. Talk about an investment. Went up 15%. By the way, not pictured here. The Phoenix Suns. Hats off to their owner, Matt Ishbia. Did you see what he did? They're doing $2 concessions.
Oh, yes.
On a number of things. We're on in Phoenix, Arizona Family Sports, which I think even might air some Suns games. Hats off to you, Matt, because at a time where it costs so much money to go to an NBA game, and concessions can cost so much, $2 for a hot dog? I mean, that is really cool. $2 for a whole bunch of different concessions, thanks to the owner of the Phoenix Suns. So I say to Matt Ishbia, very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, especially in a day and age where it's hard to go to a concession stand at a professional sports game and not walk away having spent $40.
Gotta donate a kidney to get a hot dog. I mean, it's crazy. Right. Broncos,
yeah, good for him.
Absolutely. I thought it was important. We talk about all these bad things all the time. Hats off to you, Phoenix Suns and Matt Ishbia. Broncos Chargers tonight on Amazon. The coverage starts at 7 p.m. Eastern. I will be watching. I know Sam will be watching. Broncos, Chargers. This is a big game for Denver, Sam Yarnell, and could really solidify them as a playoff team. What do you like from a betting standpoint?
For that reason, Jason Page, I lean over in the game just because we know what that Broncos offense can do. And listen, both of these teams, as much as we talk about the Chargers defense, and it is very good, don't get me wrong.
Formidable.
Both of these teams like to score a lot of points. Both these teams averaging over 20 points per game. This to me feels like a spot where we get a lot of points near the end of the season on a Thursday night. Otherwise, listen, without J.K. Dobbins in that backfield, obviously we know we're getting a lot of Gus Edwards running the ball. I like him to maybe, if with the over, I like him to score two touchdowns. That's a little bit of a stretch, I'm aware, but I think Gus Edwards is active tonight, and then you can never go wrong with some Bo Nix passing props. Give me Bo Nix over whatever passing number he's got.
I gotta tell you, I've seen the Broncos in these spots enough times this year. In these moments this year, whether it was the trip to Baltimore against the Ravens sort of early on in the year, I'm going with the Chargers. I'm going with the Chargers -2.5 tonight. I think they cover. I think they win by, you know, 6 or 7, in fact. I like the Chargers in this game tonight. I like Jim Harbaugh to throw some different looks and schemes at Bo Nix. And while there have been moments this year, and I certainly think the future is bright for him long term, he is still turnover prone on the road in this spot. I will go with the Chargers -2.5 tonight. And I actually think it's an under game. I don't know if I would bet it, but if you forced me to, if you said I could do it with Sam Yarnell's bankroll, and you know, one unit equaling 25 cents, I would go ahead and take the under in this game, at under 41.5. Cash in that bet, Sam. Cash in that bet that we were talking about off the air. Let's go.
This game's interesting for the standings.
It is. It's a big game. Give me the Chargers -2.5. That's my lock tonight. That's what I got. It's going to do it for us. Thanks, Dennis Bernstein. Thanks to you, Sam Yarnell. We're back with you for Friday Sports Wrap. Lots of NFL talk then. We'll see you.